The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Chaos reigns as the National Guard was deployed over the weekend and 500 Marines are said to be on standby. Immigration protests reached their third day. 300 National Guard arrived onto the streets. Protesters have been arrested for converging in what they're calling unlawful assembly. That's according to LA police. Politicians have hit out at Trump, though, stating that these are acts of a dictator, not a president. And also we'll talk about the breakup saga between Trump and Musk, which continues apace. I'm joined by Lorcan Lyon, head of training at the Communications Clinic, and Gina London, leadership communications expert, columnist with the Sunday Independent, and of course, former anchor on CNN. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Good morning, Pat.
Gina, your own country, although I'm to congratulate you shortly, I believe.
Yes.
You will become an Irish citizen.
In 2 weeks, I'm going to be in Killarney taking the oath. Thank you very much. And just 2 days after that, I'm actually going back to the United States.
I hope you get in.
And that is part of this fear and anxiety regime that is happening in the Trump administration right now. And I actually was saying to Lorcan before we came on that I am nervous just about, do I have to scrub my apps, articles I've written? I've never been incendiary, but I certainly do talk about what leadership is and is not. And what you're seeing in California right now, it's becoming ground zero for the tactics of the immigration regime of Donald Trump.
Earlier this morning on breakfast, they had a reporter talking about his experience downtown LA, where he actually took a few of these. They're not lethal rounds, but they're pellets and various other things. But then he went on to say, listen, Trump and the people representing him on the streets are only enforcing a law that has not been enforced for 40 years, and people have got to get used to it. He was quite Trumpian, I thought. But anyway, he said people have got to get used to the idea that from here on in, the regime of non-enforcement of immigration law is not going to be tolerated. What do you make of that kind of contention?
Well, I don't disagree that the immigration laws in the United States have been needing to be addressed and fixed in a lawful and methodological way for more than 30 years. So Democrats, as well as Republicans, are to blame for letting this thing fester. Now let's look at the tactics, though. We've got the strategy, which is to fix the immigration loopholes. And now we have the tactics of how it's being done currently by unidentified, masked, all dressed in black ICE agents coming anywhere at any time and gathering people without showing identification, without giving any kind of refuge or rights or due process. And this is what's happening on the streets in all sorts of cities, not just in the safe haven state California, but it is definitely representative.
This reporter this morning, and I was quite astounded listening to him, he said, these people, they came in here, they didn't go through the due process of looking for citizenship. Why should they demand due process now?
But, well, that's an allegation that you'd have to take apart one by one to say which ones did declare asylum, which ones are going through process. Some of the people that have been rounded up, there are very clear reports that these people were going through a process, that they were getting ready to go to their court hearing, for example, on the next step in their process. And that's where some of these agents have been rounding them up. That's why you see protests not only in the highly Hispanic neighborhood of Paramount, where these particular protests were really at the forefront over the last 4 days, but also in front of the federal administration centers in downtown LA, where the ICE agents are rounding up people while they're on their way in or on their way out from particular court hearings that could be part of a process to actually getting that citizenship. So I think that's an overgeneralized statement. But when you look at now what's happening with the Trump putting in hundreds of National Guard troops on the ground yesterday, and of course Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, saying, I didn't ask for this. This is an overreach.
And also a drop in the ocean, by the way, compared to the size of the LAPD. You know, 200 or 300 National Guardsmen, as the police themselves said, not going to make much of a difference to
us.
It's
a symbolic gesture, of course. It's an overreach by the president. And now you've got Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense, saying we've also got the military on standby. And this is technically a flagrant violation of the National Guard. It's a hybrid. So the National Guard should be first requested by a state official, like if there's an emergency for a tornado or a hurricane or something, then you ask for them to come in and be deployed. But that's not happened in this case. Trump overreached. He's using what's called Title 10 to go in and bring them in, as opposed to the Insurrection Act, which is what would also bring in the stronger military, not just the reservists from the National Guard. And that's
and of course, we can go back to January the 6th and see what didn't happen on January the 6th.
Exactly. So we've got Donald Trump talking about the insurrections. He's calling the protesters insurrectionists, but he hasn't even deployed the Insurrection Act to bring in the actual National Guard.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at there's a series of things that are going on here. This is the first time, I think, since 1965, and when our president to override a governor to bring in the National Guard. 1965 was Lyndon Johnson in Alabama to protect civil rights protesters. So it's the first time since then that a governor said, we do not want the National Guard. National Guard is coming in here.
Yeah, I mean, that situation was where the local political administration were not going to help the protesters.
Yeah, they weren't going to step in and protect protesters. In fact, many times they were the ones who were inflicting the violence upon the protesters.
Right, it was the segregationists of the Deep South back during Jim Crow.
But like that's the level of which you had to get to previously to override a governor. This, though, is the fight Trump has wanted. On immigration in particular. It's against Gavin Newsom, who's somebody who he, you know, traditionally likes as an enemy and likes to push back as an enemy. He likes it being in California. And one of the really interesting things that has happened is one of the symbols of these protests have become Mexican flags and other South American flags. These are, you know, second and third generation US immigrants who are saying, look, these are my people as well. But what the Trump orbit allows them to now do is say, see,
They're not really Americans, are they? They're really waving Mexican flags.
Not really Americans. These are insurrectionists. This is a takeover, and therefore we will take America back for you. And you talk about the need.
And the you is a specific thing to put into play, because who's the you? And that's that us versus them mentality that is very strong in the Trump administration.
And this, I think, is the core to it all, which is, yes, immigration law has always been something that Democrats and Republicans said they want to overhaul. But until recently, they wanted to overhaul it underneath the national myth that America is a country of immigrants. America welcomes everybody. If you do it legally, bring it through. That was the national myth. This administration does not hold to that myth. They no longer believe that they should be a nation of immigrants. They want to be America, how they see it, which is a very, very different country to that nation of immigrants. So it's a totally different idea of America that is taking hold. And again, we may view it and see the violence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Trump's positions on immigration tend to be popular.
Now, Trump himself was confronted by the immigration, I suppose, challenge for America. Given his own relatives came into America, was it his grandfather was on?
His grandfather was Scottish, right?
There was some relation of his anyway. I heard this over the weekend. And Friedrich Merz, when he was in the Oval Office, presented him with, I think, the birth.
His grandfather's German, I think.
Oh, his
grandfather's German, yeah.
Oh, wait, okay, yeah.
Yeah, the grandmother's Scottish. But the grandfather was actually dodging a draft.
Oh, well, there you go. Like grandfather, like son.
And Trump was not happy to be reminded by Friedrich Merz.
Yeah, was Friedrich Merz also with the bone spurs? Was that the way that he dodged it?
But, you know, J.D. Vance, who was kind of, I suppose, one of the ideological leaders of where this movement, you know, has come from and is going, has talked directly and pushed back on this idea that it's a nation of immigrants and actually look, you know, to be a citizen in America has, you know, has a certain, you know, geography, et cetera, et cetera. So they've been quite open, actually, about pushing back against that myth. I think what all this has shown to a degree as well is the kind of continuing paralysis of the Democratic Party. They don't really know how to push back against this. They don't really know who they are or how to fight these battles. Like, I mean, if you go back to 2016, they would have been much more aligned and aggressive in pushing back against the Muslim ban, against the travel ban, against the wall on the border. They were very clear on where they stood on that. You know, this kind of protest should normally be grist in the mill of the Democrats. You go back to Bobby Kennedy, you know, and Cesar Chavez in California, very, very similar protests about workers' rights, about immigrant rights. That there should be democratic ideals normally, but you sense they don't really know how to fight this because they've been so bamboozled by Trump's victory previously. They don't really know what grounds they should be fighting on, while Trump is clearer. And this is only going to continue because, you know, as Gina, as a leadership expert, knows, once you set targets on something, you know, people want to meet those targets. Yeah. Trump has now set really high targets on ICE to get a number of people deported.
And we know this is the agenda of Stephen Miller.
I was going to mention.
Now, I don't know whether you saw that piece by Stephen Miller's uncle over the weekend. It begins at the turn of the 20th century, a dirt floor shack in the village of Antipol, a shtetl of subsistence farmers in what is now Belarus. Beset by violent anti-Jewish pogroms and forced childhood subscription in the Tsar's army, the patriarch of the shack, Wulf Lieb Glosser, fled a village where his forebears had lived for centuries and took his chances in America, arriving in Ellis Island on the 7th of January 1903 with $8 to his name. Although fluent in Polish, Russian and Yiddish, he understood no English. And so it goes on. These are the relatives of Stephen Miller.
Look, Stephen Miller, who is Jewish and so therefore would be a minority in the sense, is also very clear in his anti-brown person immigration policies. And what we have here now, of course, with you mentioned, Lorcan mentioned the last administration's travel ban. We have a new travel ban taking place with the 19 countries today. And interestingly, not even including Egypt, which was apparently the precedent, the reason for all of this because of the Egyptian national that put the firebomb in Boulder, which in Colorado, which interestingly, I'm going to Colorado in 2 weeks. But the situation here is, I think, back to the earlier point about all these different fronts that Trump is putting out his tactics. It's difficult for anyone. So I don't want to put out, oh, the Democrats haven't found their footing on this. There are so many zones in the flood the zone approach to trade and tax cuts and cutting and gutting agencies and USAID completely gone and 300,000 children in the last 4 months having died, according to external experts on what the results of that have been. There are so many aspects. Harvard going on. Now we've got the immigration tactics in California. It is almost impossible to wage battles on all of the fronts of this war on democracy that the Trump administration
is deploying. I mean, when you start to write the list, it's a very long list.
You can't keep up with what are the executive orders in one column and what are the judge blockings on the other. It is absolutely, we don't have any judge as of yet that has put a block against the travel ban, but we do have a judge just over the weekend that put in a ban against the international students coming in being banned by Trump. But it is incredibly hard to keep score. So how could any one party, let alone the human people that live in the United States, figure out which one to focus on at what time?
And the problem is, anyone who's been involved in litigation knows how expensive it is. Now, Harvard have deep pockets for the moment. They can afford to go to the courts, but there are other people who are affected, whether it's a simple immigration case or your business is affected by one of the tariff bans that he introduced whimsically. They can't afford, ordinary people, you know, whose little store is going to be affected or shut down. A small wine business I came across, they import quality wines. They don't sell American wines. That business is gone, you know, once the tariffs come in, because there'll be quid pro quo tariffs. So that is a problem as well. He's got limitless pockets because he's got the Treasury.
And and interestingly, the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, is over here on this side of the pond today to try to talk with the Chinese leaders about the latest trade war that's going on with China and the United States. There are, again, it's so much happening on the big headlines. And to your point, Pat, there are small stories that you mentioned the different stories that are coming out about individuals like the winery, the small wine sellers. There was a story just this morning in the LA Times about a young girl that was hit by one of those canisters of the spray from the tactics going on in California, who's now in the hospital. I mean, she wasn't an immigrant. She wasn't overstaying her visa. She just happened to be in the fray while they were stopped at a traffic light when all of this was erupting. They weren't even in a protest, according to the individual that was being interviewed. And these types of little stories, if they could just all be gathered into one bigger story about what are the fallouts, what the ripple effect, it's fear and anxiety across the nation rippling out to the world.
Now, let's talk about Musk and Trump and the fallout. And it's very interesting that, Trump is now adverting kind of obliquely to the article in The New York Times, which suggested that Musk is basically high as a kite most of the time.
Yeah, so that's now obviously going to be his excuse. He's basically saying, look, Musk is acting like this since he left because of the drugs problem and the New York Times reporting on ketamine use and Adderall use and things like that. Look, it's obviously a fascinating human story to watch and to watch the relationship break down. When it comes right down to it, I think it happened for three reasons. One is Musk, that the big, beautiful bill he talks about, that Trump talks about, that the increase in the deficit, Musk does seem to think think that it is genuinely a bad thing to do. There is also the fact that he wanted his guy in charge of NASA. I think he thought that's probably what he was getting when he went into bed with Trump and got Trump over the line, that he'd get his man in NASA.
But then he's failed.
He failed because it turned out that he had the fella had donated to Democrats. Trump didn't like it and then therefore changed his mind. And then that's the third reason, which is ego. I think Musk appears to feel humiliated by that fact. By the fact that he didn't get what he wanted, he maybe, you know, cavitate or let Butler beware.
I didn't ask for much.
Yeah. So that ego then has happened. It probably, to me, points to two interesting elements of it long term. Number one is it does show, particularly in the short term, there is the strength and confidence right now of Donald Trump in his second term is very different to the first one. I mean, Musk is somebody who's in his orbit, who's very popular within his orbit, who is the richest man in the world, who has a lot of sway. And yet, I don't think Trump will be particularly bothered or particularly hit by this breakup. But long term, it points to the fact that the Republicans might struggle to keep this new coalition together. Trump,
I mean, if he decides to be vindictive, and the way his father Errol spoke about him, he said he's an honest guy, he's a straight talker. So what he says, he believes. But if he decides to be vindictive and deny funding to those Republicans who have towed the Trump line, or to support those who will combat, be they Democrats or Republicans in primaries, that could spell trouble for the midterms.
It could absolutely spell trouble for the midterms. I think one of the things that we need to look at when we're looking at American politics now, though, is to realize it's a very different electorate when you're looking at midterm elections and when you're looking at presidential elections, because, you know, Trump's coalition is built on low propensity voters, people who don't really vote in midterms but then come out to vote for him. So I'm saying him as an individual, I don't think he cares too much. Republicans will care. So Republicans will care about the rift. Republicans will care about the funding, and Republicans will start caring about the impacts of this one big, beautiful bill.
Well,
and we're seeing that coming down the
road. Exactly. And that's what I was going to just pick up on is, of course, Musk came out shooting, calling him a pedophile with the Epstein file and calling the big, beautiful bill, the budget reconciliation bill, of an abomination and all these kinds of things. He's kind of tempered down a little bit since over the weekend. Does he have the appetite, even though he's got the deep pockets, put another $50 million like he did in Wisconsin into all these midterm races? But to the point about this big, beautiful bill, which is supposed to, according to Trump, be signed by him on July 4th, Independence Day, I don't think that's going to happen because it's still in the Banking Committee in the Senate right now. I think it has some time to go before it goes back to conference. But if it does, and you actually do see 15 million people, as is being predicted, come off of Medicaid and off of the food stamps that these poor people who are often a lot of those Trump voters, if that happens, then I think you are going to see, without even needing to be funded by Musk, some change in these 2026 midterm elections that could then change the narrow majorities that the Republicans have in the House and the Senate.
Now, you know the way breaking up is hard to do, making up is even harder. But the question of whether there's a symbiosis going on here, whether they both need each other. I mean, you might say that Musk needs his contracts, SpaceX contracts, X contracts. But the American administration need Musk and what he delivers at the moment in terms of space, be it Starlink or the SpaceX program, getting astronauts to and from the space station, all of that. They need each other.
They coexist, and neither can, America can't really run now without Musk. So I don't think it's going to fall out to that extent. I don't think contracts are going to get cancelled. I don't think Musk is going to keep going with his pushback. I would think the likely thing is just kind of almost quiet and peace, where Musk might go back to his businesses and Trump will continue on. Whether Musk's ego allows that, whether Musk has now got addicted to the attention, addicted to the idea of being at the top table, that's the interesting thing left, because there was a path there where he could have just walked away. Look, Doge didn't really work, but he could pretend that it did, go back to your businesses, but his ego was hurt by what Trump did. I assume Trump decided really not to appoint his man to show that he was still the one with the real power.
His father says he has PTSD from his White House experience, which is possibly true.
A lot of people who used to work for the Trump administration have PTSD, and then they go and write an all best-selling book. One last thought, though, on the integrated satellites and SpaceX and Dragon, the transport for the National Space sent the space facility up there, the space station, is also that there's another sidebar story of the number of independent space companies that are looking in the wings to potentially also maneuver to get a little foothold in this competition now. That's potentially so that, yes, Musk's contracts are very intertwined at the moment, but that doesn't necessarily mean that others could be up and coming and trying to take a little bit of foothold
now,
around
now,
that.
Now, what about the Epstein files? I mean, if Trump is as smart as he thinks he is, surely those files would have been absolutely destroyed. He's got a stooge in Kash Patel who's going to do his bidding. I mean, do they still exist?
Kash Patel was on Joe Rogan over the weekend talking about these, and Joe Rogan was talking, interestingly, didn't ask directly to the FBI director, hey, what's in him? Is he in there? And that was an interesting miss, I think, for Joe Rogan on that podcast. But my gut is there isn't any smoking gun there, that there are a lot of parties, that there was a camaraderie. But of all the stories that have come out about Trump and all the 34 counts and the indictments and the federal convictions and things, if there really was something about that, it wouldn't be Musk that would be the one that would be the one making that big headline. Others would have done it beforehand.
People keep looking for this one thing, the one silver bullet that's going to finally stop Trumpism or pierce it. It doesn't exist. It's not going to be there. The way the Democrats, you know, talk about the opposition, go straight at the bill, make him feel ineffective on a policy level. Mm. That's the only route.
You just wonder. I mean, I know it's the kind of stuff we'd all hope would happen, that the Russians have the compromat. They have the video. On the plane.
We've been waiting a long time for
a said video. Yeah. It doesn't appear to be coming.
All right. On that note, and no doubt these conversations will continue over the coming months, Lorcan Nyhan, Head of Training at the Communications Clinic and Leadership Communications Expert, columnist with the Sunday Independent, Gina London. Thank you both very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.